And a man who really adds to our baseball enjoyment. He's a senior writer for the USA Today, and that is Paul White. Paul, nice to have you with us today.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, buddy. How are you?
Well, we're doing great. I appreciate your being on. This is quite a weekend it's turning out for the Giants. Number one, you had Triples Alley, had a lot of visitors last night out here. And also, Jake Peavy is on a plane coming this way. So quite a weekend for the old ball club out in San Francisco.
Yeah, it is, and Peavy is going to be a real interesting gift for him. They give up some good young pitching, but I'm really curious to see how Peavy handles being back with Bruce Bochy. They had a great relationship in San Diego. I think he fits the ballpark really well. It was very intriguing. I covered the Red Sox all the way through the playoffs last season. And for whatever reason, John Farrell, the manager there, seemed deathly afraid of Peavy's, what he felt was Peavy's inability for damage control when he get into trouble. He felt like as soon as Peavy got in trouble, it was going to fall apart, and he got him out of there as quickly as possible. And that's one of those things sometimes I think a change of scenery does some good.
Paul, tell us a little bit more about Peavy and what you think about him. And that was great insight into John Farrell. And
yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of Lincecum a little bit. And then what changed Lincecum this year is that he doesn't get, of course, last night he did. He couldn't shut it down, but doesn't have those kind of big innings. But what do you think about Peavy? How do you like him?
Well, I like him because he's a smart pitcher, and I think he's probably going to be a little bit more, I guess, confident about shutting down innings or controlling innings, especially pitching in San Francisco. That ballpark just suits his game so much better. Obviously, he was at his best in San Diego. What better place to pitch? And there are enough similarities. He'll keep the ball in the middle of the park. I think, smart enough. If you think back the years when the park first opened and Dave Borghetti talking about how the whole staff had to learn how to pitch to that ballpark. And I think Peavy's a good fit in that sense, and I think that's why he'll do pretty well.
Hey, Paul. Patrick Connor here along with Marty Lurie's KNBR 680. It's funny how people see things. If folks in Boston, I'm reading the feedback, and they think Ben Cherington got over on Brian Sabian. And out here, me and Marty Lurie are saying, hey, this is good to go. A couple of prospects who may have flattened out, plateaued a little bit. Isn't it funny how we see things from different coasts and how things just look so differently?
Well, I think in this case it fills both teams' needs. I mean, Peavy had no long-term future with the Red Sox, especially a team that's going nowhere this year. So, yeah, you look for some young arms, and the Red Sox have a bunch of their own, and they're going to stockpile them. They have a little protection too. There's no guarantee John Lester's going to be back with them next year. They're looking for as many guys as they can, and then the Giants dealt them strength. The one thing they do have in the system are good. Good young arms, and it's hard to gauge. I mean, you take Escobar, you take Blackburn, you take Kyle Crick. I mean, which guy is going to end up being the stud in the major leagues? Are any of them? Are all of them? And they all have their ups and downs. And then you talk to different scouts, and one guy likes one guy better, and one guy thinks the other guy projects better long term with the kind of stuff. And it really depends on how they develop. But the Giants have enough that I think they felt like they can get rid of at least, two arms in this case, but Escobar, obviously, the more prominent one.
Well, and Boston took money back,
right,
which means that the more money you take back, the more prospects you get. And Boston wanted the prospects, and they kept about $2.5 million of what's owed to Peavy back that they're going to pay. So that was another interesting part of it. Paul White with us of USA Today. Paul, do you think we're going to have a very active week of trading? It always, for baseball fans, we have people who come in, and all they want to do is talk about trades. We had someone in the press box last night who's an expert on that. Do you think we'll see a lot of action this week?
I don't think we're going to see as much as people would hope for. It's funny, I'm sitting here as we're talking, and I'm watching the Diamondbacks-Phillies game, and they just showed a shot behind home plate, And I just saw every scout in the world. I mean, there's a section full of guys. I mean, here's two teams that are going nowhere fast, the D-backs and the Phillies. And I saw Bob Johnson for the Washington Nationals, Jim Beattie sitting down there. I mean, teams that are buyers all sitting there looking at these two teams. So, you know, everybody wants to be active. And I think there are a lot of guys that are out there. I just think that there aren't a lot of teams that are willing to pay the price in prospects. I don't think a lot of teams feel confident that they have the depth of prospects to make those kind of deals. The Dodgers do if they want to go make a big deal or try to make a big deal. The Cardinals do, although they always seem to be reluctant to do that kind of thing. But there are very few teams that have the number of prospects to really kind of get these things done.
Any separation happening for you? I know these few weeks after the All-Star game, you like to see teams that are in it or not in it as you get close to July 31st. Kansas City, is the Central spreading out enough where Detroit looks like they will be it and maybe both wild cards come out of the West? Maybe some of those teams in the Central will open up a little bit like the White Sox, Cleveland, and even Kansas City and Minnesota.
Well, I think the White Sox and Minnesota, certainly. I think Kansas City and Cleveland both think they're in it. I think the division's gone. I think Detroit is going to finally assert itself as it should and win that division. Problem is, even though the Angels continue to play very, very well, Seattle's come back to the pack. And they fell behind the Yankees in the last 2 days for that second wild card spot. And Kansas City's just a game and a half behind the Yankees right now. So I think Kansas City and Cleveland especially like their chances of staying in that wild card race. So I don't think either of those teams is going to be a big seller, although Cleveland has an interesting one. Estrubel Cabrera, yeah, their shortstop, is very, very available because they've got a kid, Francisco Lindor, they can't wait to bring up to the majors if they can unload Cabrera's contract.
Hey, Paul, what about Tampa? Everybody thought David Price would be going to the Dodgers, perhaps, and they're the hottest team in baseball now. And they're only seven back at the Orioles. There's no way they're sellers, right?
No way at all, especially with, you know, because they have, in their minds, two more opportunities to trade Price this offseason and all the way to next year's trading deadline if they really want to wait that long. Yeah, I mean, they could win that division. They're only four games out of the wild card now.
Wow.
They're rolling and they're pitching. They got Jeremy Hellickson back. I like their chances of making the playoffs at this point.
Boy, Cincinnati has fallen apart. That's one of those teams after the break you say, boy, you better do well. They can't win a game. They can't get a hit. They can't score a run.
I think they won 1-0 today over the Nationals.
Oh, did Cueto win?
Yeah, 1-0.
Yeah, they got a win. Yeah, they got a run, a win, and you're right. It was Johnny Cueto and Aroldis Chapman, which I guess is pretty much money. But you're right. With Brandon Phillips and Joey Votto out of that lineup, it's funny. You can see the difference in guys like Todd Frazier, guys like Jay Bruce looking around saying, oh, we got to carry this team now. And I think guys who haven't been through that before are putting too much pressure on themselves, and it's become pretty obvious. And all of them are struggling now since the break. And again, you know, the National League, there is no great team. So we're going to see these ups and downs and ebbs and flows. I think the key, everybody will have them. The key is staying healthy. Cincinnati at this point, if they can't get their offense back together, if they can't get Votto and Phillips back, it could be September till we see those guys. And if that's the case, I don't know if they can keep pace because there's too many teams to keep up with.
Paul, we see the Pittsburgh Pirates come in here next week, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. They're a hot team in the National League. Give us your impression of the Pittsburgh Pirates. You're back there. You're close to the Pirates story. What's up with them?
Very much like last year, they've got that sort of feel again, but it's a different dynamic. This is Andrew McCutchen again, just taking over this team. But the interesting part of it is, and Gregory Polanco has become the second guy in there, the other catalyst, a great young, he's almost like a junior Giancarlo Stanton physically. I mean, this guy is imposing and with a tremendous amount of talent. And at the same time, Pedro Alvarez, their third baseman, is totally out of favor. Now, I've heard from people in the Pittsburgh organization that Clint Hurdle can't get rid of Alvarez fast enough. he's had him batting way down in the order. He's had him on the bench. He's home run or nothing. His defense has suffered. So it's a different dynamic there. Again, I don't know that they can go on a tremendous run, and maybe we've seen their best run. But again, if nobody asserts themselves in the National League, they're in it to stay.
Hey, Paul, Hall of Fame weekend is this weekend. Jason Stark wrote a good column today about potential Hall of Fame pitchers who are still active in baseball. Do you have a chance to see it?
I haven't yet, no. I just saw a note about it, and it sounds pretty interesting.
Yeah, they put Kershaw in there and CeCe Sabathia and right. Verlander. And Hudson is in there in the top five. You know, I think the point is this. The criteria for Hall of Fame will change for pitchers. It had to be 300. That was automatic. God, if you're Tommy John or Cotton at around 280, sorry, you're not getting in. You don't get 200 winners very much anymore, let alone 250 because of the starts. There's fewer starts. And, of course, you don't get decisions because you don't stay in the game. And this is something that's changing.
Yeah, it is. And you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how the guys from this era are assessed. Because the one thing we've seen, remember, the people who vote for the Cy Young Awards, in essence, are the people who vote for the Hall of Fame down the road for these guys, the baseball writers. And we've seen a tremendous shift in the last 5 years or so in how Cy Young Awards are voted for. It used to be all about wins and ERA. Now we're seeing the advanced stats, the metrics. You know, what Zach Greinke won that Cy Young Award in the American League in Kansas City when Felix Hernandez won his. It's not about wins anymore,
yeah.
And they're being assessed so differently. I want to see when that starts to transfer into the Hall of Fame vote.
Yeah, that's going to be the interesting part because, I mean, Lincecum is in this discussion.
Sure.
Tim Hudson's 217, I think, something like that. But, you know, to me, it was always, boy, if you didn't have 280, I'll see you later.
Now you better have a 5 WAR.
yeah, exactly. You're going to have a good WAR.
Magic Wandu.
You're going to have all the accompanying statistics and the advanced metrics. And it's going to be interesting. The first guy who comes in with you know, what would seem by Hall of Fame traditionally standards to be a mediocre one-loss record, but he has all the other numbers.
Wow.
And when one of those guys gets in, I think that's going to be the one that kind of shakes the ground in Cooperstown.
Well, that's going to be something. Paul White with us. Paul, the last thought for you. Bruce Jenkins wrote about it today in the Chronicle, and it's sort of a topical issue where Brian Gumbel brought it up. Should Tony La Russa get all the accolades he's receiving, even though he had the steroid guys who led to many of his wins in St. Louis and in Oakland?
You know, it bothers me a little bit. I mean, Tony's always been a lightning rod everywhere he's been. He's obviously been a master strategist. He's been at the head of the class and being innovative in the game. And, you know, regardless of who you have, when you get to that point, when you get top five, let alone top three, in wins all time, it's not just a product of a couple of guys who may have been cheating along the way. So, you know, I think, you know, Tony probably hurt himself by his staunch defense of Mark McGwire right to the very end in a lot of people's eyes. But at the same time, you know, he didn't cheat, and you can't take away from what he's done as an innovator, as a manager.
All right. Hey, Paul, I appreciate it as always. This was a big weekend to have you on, and
yeah.
I know you're going to be busy this week. I know I'm doing the show on Wednesday night, so if something crazy happens, I may be calling you Wednesday night.
Sounds good.
All right. Thank you.
Right
Paul
on,
White,
Paul.
USA Today, senior writer. All right.